Thanks, Greg, and hi, everybody. I'm actually presenting work that has been done, for the most part, by my graduate student, Ashley Hansen, who was unable to be here. We've collaborated on this with a number of other partners at the University of Minnesota. So we're looking at household-scale spatial and depth distributions of soil lead. So we're very fortunate in the Twin Cities because Dr. Howard Melke did a number of studies in the 80s and 90s on kind of the metropolitan scale soil lead distributions. And so he did this by sampling, large-scale sampling of house sides, mid-yards, and streets, and generated some maps. And so we know a lot about kind of these large-scale distributions. But part of the reason we decided to do this research is in the last 2 years we've started doing these community engagement events where we screen soils for lead, pH, and texture on site. And we call it Soil Kitchen with some of our partners. I know others of you have done it. Call them soil shops with ASTDR. The concept's the same. On-site soil screening, community members bring their soil, they get information there, and they get some interpretation. So the great thing for me is stepping out of the tower and interacting with a whole bunch of people for a lot of different reasons. So people come to these for many different reasons. So in the last 2 years, we've had contacts with over 750 community members all throughout the Twin Cities. And over 300 samples that we screened. And from that, all of these questions start bubbling up. And so they kind of start coalescing into the same questions that people are asking over and over again when it comes to interpretation of these results. And so there's two real major end-user information demands, which we've now turned into research objectives, that have come from these soil kitchen events that we've been doing. The first is household-scale spatial distributions of lead. So people will bring, you know, samples of soil from maybe a potential garden site or something at their household. We'll screen it, you know, and say level of risk, high, low. And then they'll say, well, what does that mean for the rest of my property? And I say, well, you'd have to get it tested, right? I'm not going to conjecture. However, what I can tell you is that, you know, a lot of studies have obviously shown that soil lead tends to be higher closer to the house side. And then people ask, how close is close? Right? So I also don't have an answer for that. So that's where this first question really comes from. Can we come up with some general guidelines? How close is close, for example? And then depth distributions of soil lead is another issue. So if you look at a lot of the public health studies, a lot of studies that have been done on soil lead, most of the time are sampling the top 5 to 10 centimeters for good reason. That's the part that we're most concerned about when we're thinking about coming into contact with these materials. But especially in the Twin Cities, there's increasing interest in urban agriculture. So when you think about converting a site then to a garden, you're talking about mixing and tilling that soil. So it's important to know what's below that. You know, can we assume that most of the lead loading is in the surface so we can screen it like that, or do we need to know more about the depth distributions? So we came up with this kind of idealized sampling scheme. This is a well-behaved house. So we did 3 transects randomly located on 3 walls starting in the southeast corner of each house. We measured surface lead concentrations every 20 centimeters along that transect from the house side to 5 meters, and then every meter after that out to, until we hit a street or an alley. We took 2 cores per transect in the near, within 20 or 40 centimeters of the house, and then in the mid-yard. And then we did a number of auxiliary samples on each side of the transects to get a sense of spatial variability. That's a well-behaved house. Most houses are not well-behaved. So there's a lot of impervious surface. A lot of times some houses will have impervious surface, especially in the cities. They have impervious surface on 2 sides. So we had to modify our sampling scheme a little bit depending on the house orientation. So we did transects. On the left side here is an example of one of our transects every 20 centimeters. We did cores. For the cores, we just used a push probe, and we very carefully then sliced that in half, making sure that we weren't smearing the soil or kind of covering what we were going to measure. We measured the cores every 2 centimeters with depths down to about 30 or 35 centimeters. We did this with a portable X-ray fluorescence instrument. I'm well aware of the limitations of this, as some people I know in this room feel. The reason that we chose to use PXRF is I wasn't concerned with hanging our hat on the number from any one particular measurement. We want to make thousands and potentially tens of thousands of measurements and assess the level of risk. And so PXRF really in situ is the way to do this when we can, you know, collect up to 200 samples on a house within 4 hours or so. Otherwise, it'd be very difficult. So 20% of these samples we measured in triplicate to get a sense of variability. We also took physical samples from those triplicated samples, and about half of those we did wet chemical analysis on. So here's the correlation between our XRF results in the field and lab values. This is from certified labs like PACE, EPA methods. And so it's pretty reasonable correlation, 0.8. That's about what Kristen Schwartz, who did a similar study in Baltimore in 2012, found. So at least in terms of the broad sense of assessing risk, we're doing a pretty good job with these field assays. It does become much more variable above 1,000 parts per million. A lot of that's probably due to the fine-scale spatial heterogeneity when we're measuring just with this small instrument with PXRF. And then just a sense of what the PXRF values look like relative to some of the wet chemistry if we do extractions. So on the y-axis here it goes up to 1. That's the value. Those are the values, normalized values we measured with PXRF. If we sent our samples to PACE Analytic, for example, EPA 3050 and 6020, we got about 80% of our PXRF value. Our soil testing lab at the University of Minnesota also does a weak extraction, and we got about. Those were about 60% of our PXRF values. So most of our PXRF values are higher than you would get if you sent your sample to a lab and did some wet chemistry. However, the level of risk is very similar. So here's what our kind of transect spatial distributions look like. These are the results from 40 houses. These houses were stratified, so it's a little bit difficult to do stratification when you're dealing with homeowners because, you know, you can't do a perfect stratification, so we've done our best, and we're continuing to improve on that design. But this is from 40 houses, different ages, different places in the Twin Cities, and about 2,200 surface measurements. What you can see pretty clearly here is that the foundation to mid-yard gradient is really the strongest driver in all the houses that we investigated. So that seems to be very true. This is similar to what Kristen Schwartz showed in Baltimore in her 2012 paper. That plot is pretty much exactly the same plot that we're showing. We do have some anomalous kind of points going on over here. So when we pulled these transects apart, it's pretty easy to explain that. So if we looked at the transects where we were able to go from the house side all the way to the curb or to an alley, they were all fairly well behaved. So you can see here the lead measurements decrease fairly rapidly. And usually most of the higher lead measurements, the higher levels of risk, were within 3 meters of the foundation. And the near to mid concentration ratios were about, the proportion of those was about 5. So in other words, the near measurements in these transects within 20 centimeters were about 5 times as high as the mid yard. So that was on these house to curb transects. In contrast, when we had house to house transects in the middle of two houses, which is very common, and you would think people would never put a garden there, but trust me, if you go to these places, people do. And so these are places that we're also interested in, and these house-to-house transects show a very different pattern. And so, as you would expect, lead levels don't really decrease at all when you have these houses this close, and a lot of times they increase depending on what the adjacent house looks like. So the concentration ratios from the foundation to the middle of those transects don't really change at all. So depth trends. These are the results from our cores. What I have in this line here is just a spline fit, just to kind of show the pattern. So we split these into the surface concentrations of these cores. We averaged the top 5 centimeter values. And so these are cores where the average top 5 centimeters were less than 400 parts per million. And you can see that there's a kind of this broad subsurface peak. We saw higher lead concentrations a little bit lower down below 5 or 10 centimeters. This is the group for cores that had surface values on average between 400 and 1,000 parts per million. You can see the peak is a little bit more pronounced and shallower. And then finally, this is the group of cores where those surface values were very high, so greater than 1,000 parts per million. What you can see is that the difference in these patterns shows you that as you get higher and higher and higher in the surface values, the maximum lead concentration is more likely closer to the surface in that case. Here's a histogram of all the cores and where the depth of maximum lead concentration was in that core. So what you can see here is that the range was pretty broad. So some cores had the maximum depth, maximum lead concentration at the surface. We had one core that had a maximum lead concentration at 37 centimeters. The median was 9, so half the cores had maximum lead concentrations deeper than 9 centimeters, and about 40% were deeper than 10. So to summarize that, when we look at these spatial distributions, these house-to-curb transects have the highest lead levels within about 3 meters of the foundation and about a 5-factor decrease from the house side to the mid-yard on average. The house-to-house transects show little to no lead decrease in between the foundation and the middle of the transect. So the implications for that, as I think about these community engagement events that we do and the questions people ask, is that we should really think most carefully about land use and siting at the household scale when we're thinking about within 3 meters or about 10 feet of the foundation and any places between houses. So, you know, with no other information, when somebody asks, you know, what does this mean for my house, that's what I would tell them is, you know, let's think more carefully about those areas in particular. Depth distribution. So again, cores that had greater than 1,000 parts per million on average on their surface were more likely to have their maximum lead concentrations closer to or at the surface. Cores that had less than 1,000 parts per million were more likely to have a subsurface peak. And around 40% of the cores that we investigated had maximum lead concentrations deeper than 10 centimeters. So the implications for that are that we shouldn't assume that the highest lead concentrations are in the top 5 to 10 centimeters. If we're interested in questions where we might be encountering soil materials deeper in the soil profile, we shouldn't assume that we're capturing the risk just in the top 5 to 10 centimeters. Also, it's very clear that lead has been redistributed downward in most of the profiles we looked at. So probably some combination of chemical and physical factors. My gut tells me it's more likely physical than chemical because the pHs are pretty high and the phosphorus values are usually pretty high in these soils. But there's a lot of earthworms and there's a lot of worm castings on the surface in these household urban soils. And so I'm a pedologist. I think about bioturbation all the time. And when I think about that and I see these, especially the pH and phosphorus values, I got to think that physical mobility is playing a big role in changing these depth distributions over time. And finally, these high surface concentrations of lead are pretty likely indicative of more recent deposition. And I know when we've seen some of these really high values at the surface of these cores, and we've talked to the homeowners, I think there was 4 or 5 houses where they didn't do it, but they were aware that the previous owner had stripped all the paint off the house without, you know, any proper protection for the soil. So a lot of that probably ended up in the soil. So that's a more recent deposition event than kind of legacy deposition. So future work, I think these patterns are really interesting. So we're going to continue to do the stratified sampling. We're trying to improve our sampling scheme, get up to 80 houses in the Twin Cities. But we're just, and no pun intended, we're just scratching the surface with PXRF. So we're, you know, we're kind of looking at total lead. I'm really interested in these patterns in bioaccessibility. So we kind of can use this as a foundation, but what does it look like when we look at bioaccessibility? We know there's co-varying trends in pH and phosphorus and organic matter along these transects. So what does that mean? And so I think it'd be really interesting to investigate the surficial and depth changes in lead form and speciation as some people have done. So I'm viewing this as kind of a foundation so we understand the patterns, and I think there's a lot that we can build on and collaborate with hopefully some of you in the audience. So thank you. So we generally avoided sampling houses or sampling in areas where we knew that had happened. So we did do our best to reconstruct it. We did have some houses that weren't included in this study specifically for that reason, because it was very obvious when we hit, one, the soil texture changed. You know, you could see with the core that we went over fill, and then all of a sudden we were in native soil, and the lead concentrations jumped up. And so we didn't include those in this. But you're absolutely right. There could be some contribution in some of these homes of some overburden that people had put on.
Yeah,
Yes, so sorry, I didn't repeat the first question. So the question was, were we able to find differences between housing ages and siding types, for example? So yes is the short answer. The reason I didn't present it is because I feel more comfortable filling out our stratified sampling scheme before we look at those trends, because we don't have, in some of those groups, we don't have well represented. But we're going to do that within the next year. But absolutely, I mean, and if you, Kristen Schwartz, again, she did the spatial work, the same work that we've done here, not the depth stuff, but in Baltimore, and she's got a 2012 paper that shows that very nicely, where you see kind of a peak in eras when lead paint was still being used, lead gasoline was still being used, and those home ages tend to cluster around these higher lead concentrations. And siding as well. In terms of, yes. So the question is, in these events, do we, and when we do outreach and interpretation, what do we tell people? What information do we provide them? So we worked with the Minnesota Department of Health to kind of develop some interpretive materials that we provide to people. And so based on their screening level, we lump them into a level of risk, basically. And then we kind of say, well, you know, in this, the samples that you brought, at least, these appear to be high risk. So we would recommend, you know, if you're going to do some kind of management here, like a garden, we recommend raised beds, different materials. You know, we have a whole suite. So depending on the level of risk, there's a suite of recommendations.